Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Caroline White, I'm Deputy Editor of Boat International, and here to discuss the week in superyachts with me is Cecile Gowart, who is our US Editor. Cecile, how are you doing?
Doing great. How are things over in London?
Good. I was just saying to my colleague, it's very much Florida weather here. It's incredibly humid and hot, and we're not at all set up to deal with it. So the air conditioning is broken. I'm sweating to do this podcast, but you know, I care. So here we are. Yeah. How are you? What have you been up to?
Well, let's see. Busy. Last week I went to the Exumas, which sounds very, very nice. And I went to see a famous boat there. I can't say which boat it is, but you'll have to stick my word for it. It was quite an interesting trip. Very interesting boat, great crew. They completed a circumnavigation a few months ago, and we were chatting about that. And it reminded me of the discussion on last week, Boat Briefing. I don't know if you caught that, but they were discussing all the problems with the Houthis in the Red Sea. And while I was in the Exumas with the crew, we did talk about their crossing. They went through the Red Sea and the Suez Canal. And it sounded epic. I mean, the precautions that they took, there were no lights allowed. They locked all the doors, of course. They blacked out all the windows. And they had inflated their fenders to fill in the stairs. So if anybody got on the boat, they would be slowing down the progress through the boat. Yeah. Not exactly a pleasure trip, I guess. And this was a few months ago already. It was before the conflict really took on such a really bad allure in Gaza. It's getting so much worse now. So this was several months before, but they had taken all the precautions.
What an incredible experience. And where did you see the boats?
In the Exumas, I was near Norman's Quay. The boat was anchored off the islands. We had some spectacular weather, which included a lightning storm, and it was just gorgeous. But it had been a little while since I'd gone to Norman's Quay. Took a little puddle jumper from Nassau, landed there. And it's an interesting place. I don't know if you remember, you might have heard of it, but it has quite a bit of history. There were pirates there, obviously, in the olden days. And then in the 80s, other pirates, more of the drug dealing sorts. There was a very famous drug dealer that was basically positioning himself there to supervise the distribution of drugs all over the US. Guy by the name of Carlos Slater. And they were the ones who built the first airport on Norman's Quay.
They had a runway. Amazing.
They had a runway there to make their operation look a little bit more smoothly. Anyway, it's long gone now. The island looks quite different these days. They have gentrified it a little bit. So there is a group of investors that took over. They have a nice marina with beautiful docks. They're not floating docks. They're sturdy ones. They're very nice. A nice cabana where you can wait with air conditioning, something that you like in London. And they have customs on site, which is great because, you know, when you went to the Exumas before, you had to go and clear customs and immigration in Nassau, which was not always necessarily very practical for particularly the yacht charters going to the Exumas. So that's a big progress. And then I didn't have time to go, but there is a place that everybody raves about called Macduff, where you go for Kelly beer and cheeseburger in paradise, I guess. So there is so much stuff going on in the Bahamas. It's really hard to keep up. We try to make a kind of a roundup on all the progress and all the developments that's going on. Our contributor Kate Lardy wrote it. It's on our website if you are interested to find out more about what's going on in the Bahamas, but I think it probably already needs an update. There's people building stuff everywhere. They're trying to balance, the environment and the development, and they're doing a pretty good job at it. It's very interesting. Very delicate balance, that.
It is. Well, good for them. What else? So what are your plans? I mean, you're all over the place at the moment, Cecile. Where are you off to next?
Right. So the reason I can't join you today is because, unfortunately, we had to cancel our trip to Bermuda, another gorgeous island. I was quite looking forward to it. Unfortunately, there is a storm in the Atlantic, or actually it's in the Caribbean at the moment, and it looked like it was curving up to go too close to Bermuda. So naturally, they don't necessarily want people to go there and it'd just be a burden on the island if they have to deal with a storm. So out of caution, we decided that probably we needed to postpone that trip. So next time, Bermuda. And then next week, I'm getting on a plane to Sao Paulo in Brazil, and I'm going to go to visit the MCP shipyard, which has currently launched its biggest yet. The shipyard is quite ambitious. They're doing quite good work, and I'm very excited to go see it in person for the very first time.
Yeah, that is an interesting yard. So they, do they make sort of explorer-ish yachts? Am I making this up?
Well, yeah, lately Quintetti was one of their most recent delivery, sort of explorer-looking, very high-volume yacht, lots of decks. That was to accommodate the owner's plans for some serious cruising. And but now they have also done some fast boats and sailing yachts as well. The owner of MCP is actually a very keen sailor. So they used aluminium a lot because they like it for its virtues as a bit of a lighter metal. And anyway.
I appreciate how you you anglicized that aluminium for me, just in case I didn't understand.
You just have to be careful with us.
You do. Well, so moving on from your incredibly busy calendar, Cecile, should we jump into some news?
Yeah, of course. What's going on this week?
Do you want to kick us off, Cecile, with some news?
So, yes, the first news that I have to share for you is that the first images of the 78-meter Admiral Yacht Platinum have been revealed ahead of her delivery, which is anticipated to happen sometime this month. According to our definitive platform, Boat Pro, she has just departed the shipyard's facilities, which are in La Spezia, Italy, en route to Carrara. The superyacht has been kept out of the spotlight since construction, so it's very exciting to see her now. And the construction began in 2019. Exclusive images reveals a host of amenities across her four decks, not surprisingly, including an infinity pool on the aft deck, a helipad, and a rounded bar on a sun deck. The exterior design is credited to Igor Lobanov and is characterized by soft lines and sculptural overhangs. Her undisclosed interiors are owed to Sino Yacht Architecture and Design, while Naval Architecture has been completed by Azure Yacht Design and Naval Architecture.
Yeah, nice. She looks like a really beautiful yacht. I think it's worth having a look at the images on our website because they tell the story really of that boat.
I hope you do get to see more of her, not just pictures from the outside.
Guess it's always down to the owner, isn't it? So we'll see how kindly they're feeling, that if they'll let us on board. In other news, the family of the French diver Paul-Henri Nogelet, one of the passengers who died in the fatal Titan submarine disaster, has filed a wrongful death lawsuit seeking more than $50 million against the American tourism and expeditions company Oceangate. Accusing the submarine operator of gross negligence, the lawsuit claims the waiver and release failed to disclose many key relevant risk factors regarding the design and operation of Titan or the materials used in its construction. In particular, it mentioned the submarine's carbon fiber hull, which was reportedly not properly tested for integrity. So what do you think of that, Cecile? I mean, to me, it sounds fair. Those who understand submersibles, who are not me, seem to agree that the company was kind of asking for something like this to happen. So speaking on this very podcast, just after the tragedy, the Triton submarine's co-founder Patrick Lay said that the submarine was an experimental monstrosity and that it should never have carried people. And he was a friend of Nogelet's, but I mean, that's quite a sad story. He actually pleaded with him not to dive with Oceangate. And he said, I tried to do everything I could to discourage him from going there. Which is, I think, quite sad. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I think that's fair. Then again, the company's founder seemed confident enough to get in himself. And as probably most people listening to this were aware of this disaster and would know that he died with everybody else in this fatal accident. I mean, you have to wonder sometimes if the attraction of the deep or of a big adventure is too strong for people to use their better judgment. Maybe it was too tempting or, you know, too difficult to say no, to pass on going back to something he apparently really loved. But I do agree, it feels someone needs to be accountable for this disaster.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like that the founder, Stockton Rush, was overly confident, to put it politely, in the sub. And on the same podcast that we spoke to Patrick Leahy, Rob McCullum from EOS Expeditions also discussed his very well-known now exchange with Rush via email, warning him that he was courting disaster by taking the uncertified sub to such depths. And he, McCullum, reported that he was quite dismissive of that suggestion. And alarm bells were ringing for McCullum, but they didn't seem to be for Rush. So he also noted, quite interestingly, that the biggest red flag of all was that senior members of the Ocean Gate team, the people who had actually designed and built this thing, wrote a report laying out 26 or 27 things that were wrong with the sub.
Yeah.
And that Stockton didn't seem interested and actually tried to silence those people.
Yeah.
So I think the question might actually be whether there is $50 million left in that company to win from OceanGate.
Yeah, I doubt it. I think it's probably more of a symbolic gesture. You know, a lot of these lawsuits are, I think, in a way, you know, when the awards are so big and you know there is no money there, and, you know, the point is to make somebody accountable.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the leading person is no longer around to be accountable. But yeah, I think in a way it has to be something that the family needs to do for their own sanity, I imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got some more bad news.
Yes. Well, this
bad
has
news podcast.
This has been such a crazy summer with maritime incidents. This weekend, I was just laying on my couch very happily, recovering from a little excursion, and then my phone just lit up with news of a new fire on board a recently refitted 2008 yacht, which was built by Hiss and originally called Atina. And it went up in flames off Olbia in Sardinia, and it was a very public incident. And of course, as usual, the accident is under investigation. Put that out there right now that nobody was injured, thank goodness. But from the videos, it looks like this fire started in the stern area, and it was posted by the Coast Guards, and it looked quite dramatic.
Yeah, I mean, so the yacht sank, right? It was awful.
Yeah, absolutely. So from what I understand, they are now in the process of recovering what they can from the wreck. Yeah, really bad one.
Well, a little less dramatic, but quite headline grabbing because it included two very famous yachts. In July, 104.6 meter Lady Mora and 78.2 meter Venus, the yacht that was built for Steve Jobs, collided. And that was caught on film by Lady Mora's owner, the Mexican businessman Ricardo Salinas. And an owner's rep from Lady Mora has just released a statement revealing what happened. So shall I read a bit of that statement?
Yeah, let's see what happened, because it was a crazy video, let me tell you.
Crazy video. You can see that incredibly distinctive Venus bow, can't you? Kind of coming straight at Lady Mora. It's quite painful to watch. So the statement read, Lady Mora was anchored in the Bay of Naples at a depth of 40 meters with 7 shackles of chain deployed, which is the minimum required for safe anchoring under the given conditions. Several hours later, Venus arrived at the anchorage and seemingly misjudged the length of the chain that Lady Mora had in the water. Subsequently, a violent squall with winds of 50 to 55 knots from an unexpected direction, different from the prevailing forecasts, caused the impact. Despite numerous efforts by Lady Mora's crew to alert Venus's crew to the blowing a whistle and hailing on the radio, it appears that the bridge of Venus was unmanned. That's quite, velvet glove.
Yeah.
It's, very polite, but suggesting they may have been.
Yeah.
The statement added that damage to both yachts was minimal and cosmetic, and the situation was amicably and professionally resolved. Although the owner did seem quite unamused in that video.
Yeah, I'd say so.
So actually, if you want to read that statement in full and take a look at that video, do head on to our website where you can see both.
Honestly, I think this kind of got way more attention than it deserved because it's well, it's somewhat minor.
Yep.
But one of the reasons it got so much attention, aside from the fact that there are two famous yachts, I think is that you have to wonder, in fact, where was the crew? You'd think someone was on watch and they'd have noticed they were drifting.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit embarrassing, I'd say. That was the vibe I got from that video.
On the other hand, I suppose the weather can be quite unpredictable and it's always easy to draw conclusions from the comfort of your comfy chair. But
it's very true. Well, just to wrap up the sort of bad news special that we seem to have stumbled into, we also had the sinking of Love Bug in Chesapeake Bay. That's the San Lorenzo. So, Cecile, that one began taking on water, and then which was deliberately run aground. Is that right?
That's what the reports appear to be saying, yes. And, of course, why the water started getting into, or why were there water ingress, is under investigation. But it appears that, yes, whoever was steering the boat, probably the captain, decided to go somewhere shallower and just laid down there. And so she just kind of light on her side. Capsized.
Sounds so gentle.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on to some happier news.
Let's do that.
So, Cecile, do you want to kick us off?
Well, sure. So the reason why we're thinking about Cannes is because I realized this morning, actually, that it's 4 weeks before the Cannes boat show since the opening salvo for the very busy boat show season in the fall. And by the time the podcast is out, it'll be less than 4 weeks even. So
yes, looking at numbers for the Cannes Yachting Festival, we have a listing of 98 yachts over 24 metres due to be attending this year. Last year it was 109 and in 2022 it was 96. So that seems to be holding fairly stable, although down by just about 11 boats on 2023. The average LOA is 32.9 meters, comparing to 31.3 meters in 2023 and 32 meters in 2022. So all of that seems pretty stable. We've got 95 motor yachts attending over 24 meters and 97 in 2023. So we've got 3 sailing yachts over 24 meters compared to 12 sailing yachts in 2023. And it looks like 2023 may have been a bit of a bumper year for sailing yachts at Cannes because there are only 5 in 2022.
Interesting.
Yeah, I wonder what happened there. We've got 62 new yachts attending and 24 debuts. So new yachts, we think, refers to any new yacht at the show. Debuts refers to new models. We've got 86 semi-custom yachts attending compared to 102 last year. That's, again, is over 24 meters.
So it looks like this is what it looks at this juncture, but probably we'll see a few more yachts come before the show opens in September 9th, 10th, sorry. While there are fewer big sailing yachts, there are more yachts and debuts this year overall.
And Cecile, how about size ranges? Can you tell us something about that?
So this year we have 44 yachts between 24 to 30 meters versus 58 last year, where we see a little bit of a decline. Between 30 and 40 meters, we have 37 versus 41. But where we see growth this year is in the 40 to 50 meter bracket, where we have 70 new yachts in that category versus just 8 in 2023 and 9 in 2022.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, shall we look at some of the debuts that we're looking forward to seeing at Cannes, Cecile?
Yeah, let's do that. I know I like Go. I've already seen it. I went to Tenkoa, the shipyard in Genoa, in May, I think, and the boat was already in the water and not quite finished, but I quite liked it. Very interesting layout. Exterior is by Giorgio Cassetta, and it's a very clever layout. 45 meter, it has a lot of space.
Okay, well, another one that we're looking forward to seeing is Maverick, the 44 meter from Cantieri delle Marche. And actually, we've got the feature on that ready to roll. We're just waiting for some beautiful new photographs to come in. So you should be able to read that feature soon. But having seen that, the text, not the boat, I can tell you she's got some really interesting features. Sounds like a very interesting owner. So I believe she has a washer and a dryer, possibly, like clothes washer and clothes dryer in the master suite.
Yeah,
why not? I mean, there's some interesting, they've done it in an unusual way. I think it'd be an interesting one to see.
Good.
We've also got the Columbus Yacht Frete, which is a 43 meter. The Ocean King Lorry. We've got a Mangusta Oceano 39. Which is a 39 meter, unsurprisingly. Cecile, what else have we got?
Oh, and you've got your favorite there. I think you wrote the feature on it. Tetley, which is a 38.76 meter semi-custom yacht from Custom Line. We kind of walked through it together. Where the heck were we?
We were in Venice.
In Venice. How can I forget? Yeah. Here we were, Caroline and I, in Venice. How romantic.
You make it sound very glamorous that you can't even remember which beautiful Italian city we saw the boat in.
That is dreadful. Yeah.
Lovely boat.
Now, Caroline wrote a beautiful feature about the boat. Make sure you check that out.
Why, thank you, Cecile. So that's in our, August. I think that is the cover boat of our August issue. If you care to look back through your library of Boat International magazines. We've also got Romeo Foxtrot, which is from HSY Yachts, and that is a 35.9 meter.
Yeah, I'm very excited to see a boat there in Cannes. I wrote to their office here and I asked, isn't that the first time you're in Cannes? I didn't get a reply, but I think it's because it's vacation time and people are looking at different things. But I'm kind of thinking it's the first time they've had a boat in Cannes.
Yeah, well, on that note, have you ever heard of B Yachts, as in Buzzy B Yachts?
So, yeah, I have.
Okay.
I was there in Turkey last year with our data guru, and we did all kinds of yards, and we were quite surprised to find it there, a 35 meter at B Yachts. But yeah, I actually, because of it, heard of it, and actually saw the boat, which was still in the metal stage last year.
Okay. Well, I'd never heard of them. So they're going to have a 35 meter called B Explorer at the show. We've also got the Pendennis Yacht Fox due to attend. That's 34.8 meter. That is an exciting one, I think.
Yeah. So B Explorer is from Turkey and so is Merrily, which is a yacht by AES Yacht. Very lovely shipyard from Turkey. She's 34.61 meters.
Okay, we've also got One, which is a 34 meter full custom yacht from Van der Valk. And we've got the AB110 from the Next Yacht Group. That is a 34 meter. Running through a couple quickly, we've got Minella, which is a semi custom yacht, which is 30.75 meters. And we've got a Filippetti F100, that is 30 meters. We've also got Higgy. How do you say that word? Is it Danish for kind of coziness or something?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't speak Danish at all.
Okay, well, we've got that, you know, the Higgy. I think it's Higgy. I apologise to all Danish, or it may not even be Danish, so I'm sorry if I'm butchering whatever language this is. That is an Alpha custom yacht, which is 29.6 metres.
Interestingly enough, it's also the name of the new MCP yacht that I'm going to go see next week.
Is it? Okay. Well, what? Let's find out if we can work out how to say the
Maybe
word and
it's,
what language it's
maybe,
in.
yeah, probably should, right?
Be polite. We've also got a Nauta Swan, 28-meter, that is called Dreamcatcher.
So yeah, there's a number of really interesting debuts there. I think it'll be an interesting show. I will be there. I guess you're not going, are you, Caroline?
I'm afraid I can't this one, but I will be at Monaco,
Okay, excellent.
fully charged and ready to go.
It's a smart decision that.
Why, thank you. So moving on from brand new exciting yachts going to be at Cannes to older yachts which are for sale. Cecile, what is your brokerage pick of the week?
Oh, I chose Athena, which is not spelled the way you should think. It's Athina, which is a lovely Benetti from 1982. The reason I picked it, she's got historical character and a timeless charm. She was built by Benetti in 1982, as I said, and this is a Canoe Stern superyacht, which has one of the few classic gentleman's Benetti yachts available. Its interior pairs polished mahogany with sumptuous cream color carpets and stylish contemporary furniture, or so I'm told. I have not been inside. She accommodates 10 people, guests, with an on-deck owner suite. She's steel hulled and it's a nice displacement yacht. Her last refit was in 2008. She's listed with Kemper and Nicholson's, and the asking price is 3.5 million euros.
Well, I mean, she sounds lovely. My pick
Yeah.
is a, yeah, I mean, she does. My pick is a very different boat. It's a 52 knot, 25 meter Pershing called African Wild Dog. So, probably the other end of
Wow.
the spectrum.
Yes.
I thought she looks so fun, and I have a kind of enduring love for the Pershing look. She's just really pretty, and she's silver, and she's just lovely. She's also had a $200,000 price drop. She's actually a 2018 boat designed by Fulvio De Simone, so I think she's lovely.
Yeah.
She sleeps up to seven in three cabins with an owner's suite, VIP, double, and a twin with a Pullman berth. There are quarters for three crew. She's got a lower deck media room and an open plan saloon with a sit-up bar forward. That's immediately aft of this triple helm station that forms a kind of focal point for that space. And then up on the sun deck is another helm station with views over the foredeck, lounging, and sunbathing areas, and a massive sun pad aft. She's now asking $3.7 million with ocean independence, which I would argue is good value for a very pretty, fun yacht. I mean, I think that would just be such a fun yacht to zoom around the Med and
Yeah.
spot for the old picnic and sunbathe.
I bet that with what you're going through in London, you're probably thinking you'd be way better off on that sun pad in the open air.
Yeah, I think you found the root of my lust for this boat. Well, Cecile, I think that's it. We've told people which boats to buy at Cannes and which boats to buy on the brokerage market, so I think we're done. Thanks everyone for listening to this week's boat briefing, which was mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen and Adam Geest, and is a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next week.